You are listening to a sermon by Annika Cross, recorded on Sunday, March 3rd, 2024 at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, recently a friend of mine lost his job. He was dismissed from his relatively new position as the head of a small nonprofit after a vote of non-confidence was made against him. There were several things at play, including one longtime employee who was passed over for that position, who manipulated the office against him, a board that didn't provide help or reviews, and my friend, who acted out of fear rather than facing interpersonal issues head on. And as conflict arose, the board decided that it would be easier to lose a newer employee than to lose people who had been part of the organization for a long time. Now, as you can imagine, my friend was devastated. After his dismissal, he was pallid, his shoulders fell, and this 6'3" man felt small and wounded. He learned about some of the malicious things that happened behind his back, and his injury got worse, compounding on the PTSD that he already lives with. So what does that have to do with Hannah's story? From my perspective, both of these stories have to do with self-worth. The passage from 1 Samuel talks about a woman who's unable to have a child. And Hannah, in her context, is told that her worth as a woman is in her ability to produce children, specifically male children, to perpetuate her husband's line. Because she is unable to do so, her self-worth plummets. Just like my friend's self-worth after he lost his job. This feeling of failure, of being judged, is consuming. Hannah is mocked by Penina. Penina is Elkanah's second wife, who is able to have children and is yet less loved by her husband than Hannah. Penina is described in 1 Samuel 1:6 as Hannah's rival. Now, before we judge Penina too harshly, I want to suggest that the patriarchal system sets women up in competition against each other for the favor of the men in power, which is why Penina acts the way she did. But that's a sermon for another day. Still, for Hannah to have her infertility thrown in her face is harsh and is cruel. Hannah's role in her society was to bear children to help grow the small nation of Israel. And her value was placed solidly on what should have been her reproductive abilities. Hannah feels social pressure and shame because she's unable to fulfill her given duty, her supposed purpose. Rachel Miller Jacobs, who was a professor of mine when I was studying at Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary, says in her creative retelling of Hannah's story, "It is a terrible thing to do to people, to make them nothing more than one thing." Because Hannah is unable to get pregnant through no fault of her own, her mood sinks lower and lower. We can see that she stops eating and drinking, classic signs of depression. Now, in addition, the people around Hannah don't support her well. Her husband, though he loves her, says one of the most foolish things he could possibly say. "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons?" He meets her grief by telling her that she should be grateful for what she has, i.e. him. Mistakenly, he tries to cheer her up by saying that she shouldn't have needs outside of him, that he should be what completes her, and therefore she shouldn't be upset that she can't get pregnant. A flawed response at best. and one that again puts Hannah's worth outside of herself in her ability to be a wife to her husband. In my friend's situation, the equivalent would be something like me telling him, well, yeah, you lost your job, but I'm still your friend, so I can't see why you're upset about it all. Cheer up. Hannah isn't actually heard by the people that surround her. Even the high priest Eli assumes the worst in her as she desperately utters her silent prayers. He says in verse 14, how long will you make a drunken spectacle of yourself? Put away your wine. And yet again, Hannah is forced to explain herself and justify her pain. All of this perpetuates her belief that she is not enough as she is, and not a single person around her assures her that she is inherently loved and valued as she is. And in her weeping and painful aching for a child, she is not heard until she comes before God. Distressed, weeping bitterly, she addresses God by name. O Yahweh, if only you will look on the misery of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant. In the song we sung earlier today, it says that Hannah bargained with her Lord and does so in this prayer. She prays so hard that despite making no sound, her lips move and her body sways and her tears fall. Her prayer is more than just words. It is an embodied prayer that takes over her. She pleads with God that God would see her pain. Now, we know that while after this body-shaking prayer, Hannah becomes pregnant. According to the passage, Hannah and her husband don't have sex until they return from Shiloh, but it is immediately after her prayers in the temple that Hannah finds relief from her sorrow. Verse 18 in the NRSV says, she ate and drank with her husband, and her countenance was sad no longer. I think there's an argument to be made here that her interaction with God is what eases her suffering. Unlike the people she interacted with before, Peninnah, who mocked her, her husband, who offered cold comfort, and even Eli, the high priest, who couldn't see her for who she was. Unlike the people she interacted with before, God hears Hannah in her woundedness, in her grief, depression, and anxiety. Because she's able to come to God with all that she is carrying, and she doesn't need to justify herself, she is reminded of in whose image she is made, and that she is loved unconditionally. Her interaction with God does not reinforce her negative self-image. Rather, it uplifts her and helps her to return to herself. Of course, there is so much joy in someone believing they could not have children, finding themselves pregnant. This is absolutely an answer to prayer, but it is a piece of it. Hannah's self-worth is reestablished as well, so the interaction with God yields many blessings. Now, Hannah's story is one of six stories of barren women in the Bible, and the word barren has fallen mostly out of fashion, and for good reason. The word has connotations of a woman's worth being tied to her ability to have children, and the Bible even states in a few places that God closes wombs or makes women barren as a punishment for immoral behavior, so there's stigma and harm around that word. So I want to suggest for our purposes today that we redefine barrenness. That barrenness instead is a state of being, when we get so overwhelmed by our sadness, our fear, our anxiety, we enter into a state of barrenness where it becomes next to impossible to grow good things in ourselves. In times of barrenness, we have lost hold of our sense of self-worth and that we are loved unconditionally. In times like these, our creativity is stunted, our relationships suffer, our care for ourselves stops, and we lose perspective. Hannah and my friend who lost his job embody this state of barrenness. They feel despair and have lost their sense of self-worth. When we take a deeper look at Hannah's story, we find that we can all relate to it. Who among us hasn't lost perspective when we believed we were too stupid, too slow, too unskilled, too fat, too thin, too old, too weak, too mentally ill, too untalented, too something? We each have things in our lives that try to convince us that we are unworthy. Hannah found relief in her interaction with God, finally being heard as she was. And I am not sitting here today to tell you that we can pray away mental health concerns. Let me make that very clear. But God met Hannah where she was, and that is where she found her relief. And God has and continues to meet each of us in our barrenness. God reminds us that we are not alone, that we are fully known and called beloved, no matter what state we are in. Thanks be to God. Amen.